Welcome to the Green Insider, powered by eRenewable. Each and every podcast, host Mike Niemer will bring you energy experts to help you better understand the renewable and sustainability space. Education's important to us because it's important to you, the listener. Now, here's Mike Niemer.
Welcome into the Green Insider podcast, powered by eRenewable. I'm your host, Ron Culver, and with me as always is Mike Niemer, CEO of eRenewable. On today's episode, Mike is joined by John Maurer, co-CEO of Opal Fuels. But before we dive into their conversation, let's hear from Mike's better half, COO of eRenewable, Ann Niemer.
Ann Niemer here, COO of eRenewable. We know today whether you're a public company, private equity, or a privately held company, ESG and sustainability are important to your company. At eRenewable, we can help you achieve some of those goals. If you have any questions or need any assistance with regards to reaching your sustainability goals, please visit us at eRenewable.com to learn more. As always, thank you for listening to The Green Insider, powered by eRenewable.
Thanks, Ann. And now here's Mike with the co-CEO of Opal Fuels, John Maurer.
Welcome to the Green Insider podcast, powered by eRenewable. I am Mike Niemer, your host today. I'd like to welcome to the show co-CEO of Opal Fuels, Mr. John Maurer. John, how are you today?
Good, Mike. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show here today. Let me give you a little bit of background about me and my company. Opal Fuels is a public company as of about 18 months ago. We're listed under OPAL on the NASDAQ. And about 80% of the company's shares are owned by our parent company, Fortistar. So we have somewhat limited float on the public exchange. I've worked for Fortistar, the parent company, for well over 30 years. And we started in landfill gas to energy in the late 1990s. So I've been doing landfill gas to energy for over 25 years. And it's important as we kind of bring you up to date as to what that means to understand that we've been doing this for a long time, and the technology is proven for what we do. It's not anything sexy or rocket ship oriented. We started developing landfill gas to electric projects in the late 1990s because we had a history of doing renewable energy projects. And this felt like an area that was ripe for consolidation. And we built a significant portfolio of landfill gas to electric projects over a period of time. And by about 2012, we realized that there was probably another aspect to this business. And that is fueling vehicles with CNG. And so we bought a company and really made a large effort in terms of making a penetration into fueling compressed natural gas, heavy duty trucks with first natural gas and then with renewable natural gas. About 2017, 2018, the whole RNG industry of producing renewable natural gas really started to take off. And we recognized that our portfolio of landfill gas to electric projects was really the raw material for building an RNG portfolio. RNG projects, by their nature, are more valuable than the electric projects themselves because of the value of the RINs. We can talk a little bit more about RINs as we go on, but that's really the government program that supports this is called the Renewable Fuel Standard. And the Renewable Fuel Standard was part of the Clean Air Act in 2005 and was updated in 2007 and permitted various classes of renewable fuels. We're all familiar with ethanol as being a renewable fuel that everybody uses in their cars. You see it on the gas pump, E85 or whatever, and that's got 15% ethanol in it. The ethanol industry really grew up around these regulations. And more recently, we saw renewable diesel really start to take off. Well, Congress mandated a certain amount of cellulosic fuel as well, but that hasn't really taken off the way that it should have or could have. And so now the EPA is really promoting that cellulosic or D3 fuel. And that's really the basis of RNG created from landfill gas, created from waste water, or created from agricultural sources such as dairy manure. So we started in that 2017-18 period really looking to convert our projects and find an entree into renewable natural gas. We ended up buying two distressed projects and turning those around in 2019 in Pennsylvania, and that formed really the cornerstone of our RNG business.
We've before you go any farther, I'm going to backtrack a little bit on what you previously said. So you brought up two things that I've known for a long, long time. I'm dating myself here, but ethanol, I bought fuel for convenience store chains back in 1985, and we used ethanol then, putting in the 10% blend. So familiar with that for a long, long time. Then from 93 to 96, my wife worked at Enron, and she was in their compressed natural gas company and found fleets to convert over. So she even drove a CNG car back then. So what I want to get to is not necessarily ethanol, because that's been around and that's been kind of mainstream for a long time. But CNG has taken a lot of years to really grow the way people initially thought it was going to back in the day, in the early 90s, okay? So do you see the RNG space growing at a faster rate than what the CNG space did from the 90s forward?
Well, the CNG space grew okay, CNG, interestingly, I was thinking ethanol. Ethanol grew very fast and it grew
ethanol up. Ethanol has had a great market for itself, yes.
It grew up to the blending wall. It's now, you know, the cap on ethanol is how much you can blend and the number of cars in the United States. So when it comes to CNG, CNG growth has been, you know, particularly the best application for CNG right now is heavy duty trucks. And as a vertically integrated company, we are building about 40% of all new CNG stations for heavy duty trucks. And we see that growth taking off now. Why didn't it grow as much before? The engine technology was fairly new. As you said, your wife had a CNG car. It was common in places where they didn't have gasoline to have CNG cars. That would be true in South Asia and parts of East Asia, where you see it more commonly. It just didn't take off because we have plenty of gasoline, and relatively speaking, that gasoline is pretty cheap. But it really found a home in heavy-duty trucking. Right now, you can switch from diesel to CNG, get an equivalent driver experience, both in terms of fueling and hauling, at a lower cost than diesel. And so when you add RNG into the mix, you also get scope one and scope two emissions eliminated. So you have this great benefit. The only manufacturer in the US today of engines for heavy duty trucks is Cummins. The Cummins engine really was adopted in the late 2000s into the beginning 2010s and became a workhorse of the industry, albeit at a fairly small penetration. And most of the people who converted, like our largest customer is UPS. And UPS went whole hog into this because of that, what I was saying before, good driver experience, lower cost than diesel. When you add the benefits of RNG onto it, it decreases their fuel costs even further. and increases adoption. So it was really that process where RIN prices started to become, let's say, higher or better defined and adopted in the mid to late 20-teens, that all of a sudden, you know, people realized that they could get a significant additional cost savings by converting. Now, Cummins, realizing that their 12-liter, which is their highest, most powerful engine that they have, is a little underpowered for the big over-the-road semis, they're replacing that engine with a 15-liter engine. And that 15-liter engine is just rolling out. First test trucks are out. The initial industry response to that adoption is very, very good, both in terms of reliability, the cost savings associated with it, and fuel economy, driver experience, et cetera. So what's going to happen, we believe, is now that whole heaviest end of the heavy duty truck market is going to really start to see that it's got a 15-liter engine out there, and we'll see significant more sales in the coming years. So we really do see that growth. Mike, does that answer your question?
It does. You know, I think everything that you said with regards to UPS and everybody else, it sounds like RNG is significantly ahead of the curve from where CNG was in the beginning of its time and how long it took to get here. So it's definitely making headway at a faster rate, and I'm glad to see that.
You know what's interesting, Mike, is that when you look at heavy-duty trucks are difficult to decarbonize. When you look at the alternatives to diesel fuel, there are really very few options today. People hear a lot about battery electric vehicles, but in the heaviest-duty applications, batteries are just too heavy for the trucks. They either have to limit their range or limit their payload. And obviously, that's not a good thing for a logistics company looking to make deliveries across the U.S. Then you have hydrogen. I think hydrogen is at a stage of adoption where CNG might have been back in that late 90s, early 2000s period, where it'll take a little bit more time until the distribution of hydrogen grows and the fuel cell electric technology really catches up to where that is. So in the meanwhile, the only real answer to decarbonizing this heavy-duty transportation, and transportation sector is one of the greatest emitters of greenhouse gas in our country, so is renewable natural gas. And renewable natural gas can serve a portion of that market, but only a portion of it. There's not, right now there's 44 billion gallons of diesel fuel in the heavy duty market. And right now we're producing maybe a billion or so, maybe 600 million. If we grow 4-6 times over the course of the next, 5-7 years, we'll still only get to, 15% of the heavy duty market is what we can decarbonize. But hopefully that makes a significant dent in replacing fossil fuels with this clean, renewable, cellulosic, renewable natural gas.
Well, you know what you said. What you said about hydrogen, kind of being more of the trajectory of CNG, like I referred to. I think you're probably right on that. I see that as a slower growing product than the RNG. But for the RNG listeners out there, because we've had half a dozen shows on RNG, it's my understanding that the average plant is about 800 MMBTUs. A day that they can produce with regards to renewable natural gas. Now, how does that 800 MMBTUs convert into renewable natural gas that's going to go into a vehicle? It's the same exact process,
so,
or something different?
So 800 would be the size of a large dairy project
right,
or small landfill. Landfills tend to be much larger in terms of source of RNG. And so you'll see 2,000, 4,000 or more per day. We think about it in terms of millions of MMBTUs per year. And, you know, a large project might be 1 million MMBTUs per year. A small project might be, you know, 0.3 million MMBTU per year. And then that would, again, be, you know, the larger of those dairy bag projects. In terms of, there's about 7.8 or 8 gallons per every MMBTU. So you can take your MMBTUs and multiply it by 8, and that'll give you your gallons that are the equivalent of what we're generating here. So there, again, there's a substantial ability to decarbonize that heavy duty trucking market, but not for the entire. Now, Mike, let me just, I'd be remiss to not tell you that there's other options for using this gas as well. Anything that's a user of methane gas today can be decarbonized using RNG. So utilities across the country, gas utilities, want to decarbonize their pipelines and their residential and commercial service that they provide. Again, not enough RNG to go around, but a lot of these pipelines have promised their public service commissions and ratepayers that they're going to get to 20 or 30% of their system by 2030. For anybody listening, Mike is shaking his head no, and he's absolutely correct that would be impossible for every one of them to get there. So if all of a sudden we directed all of this gas to these voluntary consumers, such as the utilities, again, there wouldn't be enough to decarbonize those systems, even to the tune of the 20 or 30% that they're seeking. But if you look at each of them by themselves, and I won't call out any particular utility, but whoever buys their gas from a utility, you can look at their rate filings and see that they've each promised some renewable natural gas into their systems by 2030, and it just won't happen there. Then there's the European markets, which are another source. We all know that carbon is a commodity that people are trying to trade. And to determine what the value of that carbon is of renewable natural gas, we're seeing a lot of programs in Europe, whether it's in the UK or in Germany or in the Netherlands or other countries, where they're trying to blend these renewable gases and to promote the blending of renewable gases into the system, which will obviously displace the fossil fuels from the system. It's a good goal, and it really gets to the high level public policy that is behind and supporting what we're doing. And that is that as long as we have this organic material in the form of trash going into landfills or dairy manure or wastewater systems, so we all flush our toilets, and we'll have this gas being produced, or at least the ability to create the gas that's being produced. And with methane being one of the most destructive greenhouse gases out there, lingering in the atmosphere for as much as 80 times CO2 over a 100-year period, that's a significant goal. In COP28, not to mention 27 and 26, we heard that the lowest hanging fruit and the most important thing that we can do is to collect fugitive methane gas. And so we contribute directly to reducing global warming by collecting that methane gas and putting it to a productive use in generating RNG. And in generating RNG, utilizing it, whether we utilize it in transportation, which, as I said before, is one of your dirtiest sources of pollution in the U.S., greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S., or you use it in energy, or you use it in other sources, it goes to decarbonize another source. So you really get that double-barreled bang for your buck. Oh, listen to that alliteration.
I love there you go.
And of reducing the methane and reducing fossil fuels. So we like it. In fact, our employees are really engaged in what we do because it's exciting. We're in a growth area. We're supporting these policy initiatives of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And we're being successful while we're doing it. So really excited about where we are and where we're headed, Mike.
Well, John, you know, that said, going back to you guys, I know are big in the truck fleet industry and the transportation world. But if somebody's listening, they're thinking, well, EVs having all these troubles because they don't have the infrastructure in place for people to fill up. I know by going through your website that, you know, you have dots all over the United States of where you have stations. Tell us how many states you're in and how many stations do you guys fuel? And also, how many plants do you currently have?
Sure. So on the downstream side, which we call our fueling network, we've built over 350 fueling stations. The stations we build are dedicated to particular fleets. So I mentioned UPS before. We also build stations for companies like GFL, the waste hauler, waste management, or WM, the waste hauler, and other fleets. We're building today about 40% of all new stations that are built. And when we build it, as I said, on a dedicated basis or behind the fence. So the fueling is just for our customer. They're converting a diesel fleet into a CNG fleet, and then they're using this renewable natural gas to fuel their trucks. This is a very, very reliable source of fuel. It has a very high degree of availability, low amount of downtime, and it is less expensive than the diesel fuel and trucks on an overall cost to the fleet owner. They'll get substantial savings in terms of fuel, and they'll decarbonize, as I said before, getting zero scope one and zero scope two emissions at the same time. You know, it's kind of embarrassing to say that we're offering kind of a discount to diesel with zero scope one and two emissions.
Well, John, I think that's called a win-win, isn't it?
That's a win-win.
There you go.
As I said before, I think that it will be applicable to as much as 10 or 15% of the heavy duty trucking fleet. So we see ourselves as kind of a transition fuel to that stage in the future when perhaps battery technology and the ability to charge those batteries improves to the point where it's more reliable, or where hydrogen becomes a more proven fuel source and you're able to transmit that hydrogen to your fueling stations. So we definitely see that as the future, and we look forward to kind of participating in this interim period of transition.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining me on today's show. That's a great note to end on. You guys are doing a fabulous job there at Apollo Fuels, and you guys should be very, very proud of yourselves for what you're doing to help fight the climate change and making everything a little bit greener and healthier for everybody. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having such a great show and a great listening base, and we really appreciate your asking us on today.
My pleasure. Everybody have a good day. That was Mr. John Morrow from Apollo Fuels, the co-CEO, talking to us about renewable natural gas in the transportation industry. John, thanks again. Listeners, thank you for joining us. Have a good day.
A big thanks to John Maurer for joining the podcast today, and thank you all for listening. A brief reminder that if you're not yet subscribed to the Green Insider podcast, what are you waiting for? Become one today from wherever you receive your podcasts, and please leave us a 5-star rating.